Welcome to the WebSphere Support Technical Exchange. Today's topic is understanding and configuring the DTX.ini file in WebSphere Transformation Extender. Today's presenters are Arun Ramamurthy and Phil Van Balen. Arun has been working with and supporting WebSphere Transformation Extender for 11 years. Phil has been supporting WebSphere Transformation Extender for 10 years. Their support duties involve troubleshooting WebSphere Transformation Extender on multiple platforms. At this point in time, I would like to turn the presentation over to Arun and Phil.
Thank you, Joseph. Hello, everyone. Welcome to the WebSphere Transformation Extender Exchange for understanding and configuring the DTX.ini. Please move to slide 2. For today's agenda, the presentation covers information on understanding the following DTX.ini configuration file settings. We'll look at the file listener settings. We'll go over the launcher, resource manager, and connections manager debug settings. We'll look into the max threads and watch max threads settings. And then we'll go into the launcher, the different launcher map states, going into the init pending and resource pending states, and then look at other settings like stream maximum, run map cache, and poll wait time min. Please move to slide 3. And then look at some of the adapter idle settings, and then go over the JVM and JNI settings that are in the DTX.ini. And finally, we'll go over some of the aspects of contacting technical support to get a faster resolution for your issues. Please move to slide 4. The DTX.ini file is a configuration file that is used for setting various parameters. This is basically most commonly used with the launcher component, also used with other components as well. And this is located in the install directory of the WebSphere Transformation Extender. So basically for on Windows, if you have the install location at C:IBM WebSphere Transformation Extender 8.3, that's where the file will be located with the name DTX.ini. And on Unix, this would be located under the config folder of your install folder of your WTX install. You can basically use any text editor to edit the file and change the parameters in there. Some of the information that's contained in the DTX.ini or it has specific settings for the launcher that can help in fine-tuning the launcher for better throughput and performance. It has settings that can help in debugging the launcher issues and in adjusting the adapter idle settings. Please move to slide 5. Now let's look into the file listener settings. The different settings for the file listener that are available in the DTX.ini are the file logging, the file listen count, the listen sleep time, the directory scan wait time, and the journaling. Please move to slide 6. The file logging setting is basically used to enable the tracing or logging functionality for the file listener. This is applicable only when using the file triggering or the file adapter from the launcher. And the first step for debugging this would be to enable the file logging in the INI. And to enable this, you need to specify a valid complete path for the directory and the file name. And then you need to save the INI and restart the launcher. It is usually suggested that this path for the directory be a local path to the launcher and also not to use the UNC path as much as possible. Once the log is generated, the different log entry definitions that are in the log are made it, which means that the file adapter found a new or updated file and it will notify the launcher trigger on that particular file. If you see something like miss it, this basically means that the file adapter found a trigger file, but it has already triggered on that file, and there was no updates since it last triggered. So it will not trigger on that file again. And you can also see a 10-digit number, which is the absolute file creation time. And when this 10-digit number changes for the same file, which basically indicates that this file is a candidate to be a new trigger for the file listener in the launcher. Please move to slide 7. The file listen count is basically the number of files to process at a time per directory before it goes to the next directory. And the default value is 25. If you have 0, it means all. And to set a different value, basically you need to remove the semicolon and set a value as per your requirement. If you have too many directory watches for the file triggering in your launcher, it's basically better to decrease this value for trigger uniformity. But if you have just two or more watch directories, then this may not have much effect. And decreasing this value when you have a lot of watches will basically help the launcher. And this is more of a fine-tuning parameter, which you need to come to a value based on different settings as per your launcher environment. And basically the suggestion is usually to limit the number of directories to watch in a particular launcher to around 5 to 15. This is not a hard and fast number, something that you, as indicated, this is more of a fine-tuning parameter, but generally it is seen that around 5 to 15 would be better, which would yield better results. Please move to slide 8. The listen sleep time is the time in milliseconds between directory processing. The default value for this is 50, and to set a different value, you need to remove the semicolon and set the value. If you see that the CPU level is high when the launcher is idle, then increase the value for this. This would basically help in reducing the time that the launcher spends in checking the different directories for new files when there are none. So you don't want the launcher to unnecessarily spend more time in checking the directories if there are new files. So if the CPU level is high when the launcher is idle, it is better to increase this value. Please move to slide 9. Similar to the listen sleep time, the directory scan wait time is the time in milliseconds between repetitive directory scans. This is a Unix-only configurable parameter. The default value for this is 50. And again, to enable this, you need to remove the semicolon and set a value as per your requirement. This operates at a much lower level than the listen sleep time. And again, increasing this value if the CPU level is high when the launcher is idle would help. Please move to slide 10. Journaling is basically used with clustering to enable the cluster support for file triggers, journaling for file triggers. And to enable this, you need to uncomment and enter the shared drive and a directory for the active node where the journal files should be created. Usually for catastrophic failure recovery, the journaling entry needs to be added to prevent lost or duplicated transactions. The journal files are created during map execution, and the lifespan of a journal file is from the map initialization through the map termination. The journal files contain information about the state of the input files triggered, the map, and any output files. And during the processing of the maps that are triggered by files, a journal file is created to track the state of the mapping process. And upon the launcher startup, if there are journal files that are present in the user-defined directory, as specified in the dtx.ini, where you specify the journaling directory path, etc., each file is opened, the journal files, when the launcher startup is done, and the input and output status is checked before proceeding to complete the action or rolling back. Please move to slide 11. Now let's look into the different debug settings that are available in the dtx.ini for the launcher, resource manager, and connections manager. The different debugs that are available are, for launcher, it is the launcher log and debug controls. and debug controls for the resource manager and the connections manager. Please move to slide 12. The launcher has two different logging facilities in the INI. One is the launcher log. And to enable this, you basically uncomment by removing the semicolon in front of it and then saving the dtx.ini and restarting the launcher. Doing so will create a file with the name compoundsystem.datetime.txt. That is if you're using a compound system. If you're using separate MSLs, separate processes, then the name of the file would be that MSL name datetime.txt. And based on what launcher log types you have enabled in the INI, that information would be available in the launcher log. So basically, you can see the different launcher log types available are E, W, S, C, where E is for error, W for warning, S for startup, and C for the configuration summary. This file is basically created with the launcher startup. So the size of this file is not very big, or it does not get too huge. If there are many warnings during the launcher startup or any map errors during the launcher startup, all these are available, or these are input into the launcher log file. But that's about it. But as the launcher runs, if there are any warnings, that may be appended. But otherwise, this log file will not get appended constantly. So the size of this file should be okay, and it should be okay for you to enable this during your normal launcher runs. There's another debug option for the launcher called as the debug controls. This is much more detailed debugging option available for the launcher. And the different options debug controls available are log trace, log debug, log info, log warning, log error, and log fatal. By default, all of these are set to zero, which basically means it's not enabled. And to enable these debug options, you need to set it to 1. And then, of course, you need to save the dtx.ini and restart the launcher. This log file is used for more detailed debugging and logging purposes when you encounter issues from the launcher failures, map failures, etc., during those kind of situations. And the size of this file can get very big or large. Why? Because for each map run maps or watch map watches, etc., for any of the map runs, all the information is appended to this log file. So the size of this log file can get pretty huge. So you need to keep an eye on the size of this log file and monitor it. And it is not recommended for these logs to be enabled in the normal production runs for the launcher. If you need it, you can just enable the log error or log fatal options for this debug, for the launcher debug, and just leave it. If you are okay with the size of this log file getting a little bigger for the error and fatal conditions whenever the launcher encounters those kind of problems. But usually during production runs, the number of errors and other things that may occur are less. So you can, if you wish, as per your company policies or as per your requirement, you can enable only these two options. But for general debugging purposes, or if whenever we from support request for launcher debugging, etc., we need all the options to be enabled so that we can get a clear and detailed understanding of that particular problem or to debug the issue. Please move to slide 30. The same debug controls that are available for the launcher, like the log trace, log info, log fatal, log error, etc., those are available for the resource manager as well as the connections manager as well. And in order to enable this, you need to set it to 1. And the default is 0, which is not enabled. The resource manager debug controls basically helps to debug the resource management issues from launcher. Something like the threading issues, the resource pending issues, those kind of issues can be looked into or debugged by enabling these debug controls for the resource manager. And the connections manager debug controls helps us to debug the problems associated with the adapter connections issues. The adapter connections issues, like if you have database adapter connection issues, like you have some kind of a database adapter problems that you're encountering, and you're not sure what's going on through the launcher when the launcher started or when that particular MQ adapter triggered, etc. All those kind of issues can be debugged by enabling these debug controls in the Connections Manager as well. Also, one more point to notice, the Connections Manager debug controls are available for the launcher, the command server, as well as the software development kit, all the three components, whereas the resource manager and launcher debug controls are only for launcher environment. And as discussed earlier, for any of the DTX.ini settings or the above DTX.ini settings to take effect after you make the changes, you basically have to save the file and then restart the launcher. Only then the changes will take effect. Also, these launcher and resource manager as well as the connections manager debug options can be enabled from the management console as well. You don't need to do this from the DTX.ini. You can do it from the management console as well. If you follow that method, it can be done dynamically, which basically means you don't need to recycle the launcher. And then you can turn them off. Please move to slide 14. Let us look into the Macsters and watch Macsters. These are the settings that can help with multi-threading a system. Please move to slide 15. The max thread setting is one of the critical or important settings for multi-threading a system. And basically, to enable this, you need to uncomment and set a value as per your requirement. The default value for this is 20. This specifies the number of maps or threads that will run concurrently for all the watches in the launcher environment, provided that no other settings have conflicting values. The watch max threads, the disable max threads, and max concurrent map instances can all override the max thread setting. When setting this, you need to keep in mind that if you have the max thread setting too high, the overall system may become slower due to context switching between too many threads in the launcher. And if the number is too low, then it might have too much of an idle time because the CPUs are really not so busy. Also, this depends on how the maps are designed and what they are doing. So basically, what you need to determine if the maps are CPU bound or IO bound. If they are CPU bound, then probably less threads per CPU is better. But if they are IO bound, then probably more threads makes more sense. You can determine if it is CPU bound or IO bound by monitoring the system resources. A map that is doing complex transformation is likely to be CPU bound, where it's doing a lot of computing. While maps that are dealing with large amounts of data, input, output, files, etc., but they are doing simple transformations, they are likely to be more IO bound. And also this particular setting means this is also depends on how fast the CPU that you're running on is and how much IO is occurring on the machine. Please move to slide 16. So based on all these factors, an optimum value needs to be determined for the max thread setting by fine-tuning and testing the system with different values. You need to test it with different sizes and volumes of data that you are likely to get either currently or in the future when that particular map set of maps or that particular launcher having all the watches runs. When testing with that different sizes and volumes of data, you need to monitor the system resource usage, the application resource usage and all, and then tune the parameters accordingly. Ideally, what we have seen is you can set the value based on the number of available CPUs. The general observation is anywhere between 2 to 6 times the number of CPUs would yield the best results, assuming everything else is tuned properly. But this is again not a hard and fast number, that's 2 to 6 CPU times the number of CPU. Simply because there'll be a lot of factors that can vary between environments. So the ideal test or the ideal way to determine the optimum value would be by testing it with different volumes and sizes of data on that particular environment, and then coming to that value. Please move to slide 17. The watch max threads, it is used to set the max threads per watch. Remember, the max thread setting was for the entire launcher, for all the watches in the launcher, whereas the watch max threads is per watch in the launcher. And to enable this, you need to set a value, and the default value is zero. This is also known as the global max threads per watch. And this cannot exceed the max threads value. Why? Because max threads is for the entire launcher, for all the watches, and this is per watch, so this cannot exceed the max threads value. This needs to be tuned in accordance with the other settings for the threading. If you don't tune or set this properly, it can have a negative impact on the performance. So you need to exercise caution when you are setting watch max threads, all these settings, which should be done based on your testing. Also, I would like to bring to note here another setting that you might have heard earlier is max concurrent map instances setting. This is in the IFD. This is an important value, and this setting, if used, this overrides the max threads, watch max threads, and the disable max threads launcher settings. If you have a map or a set of maps that must run no matter what else is happening on that particular server or the launcher, you can use the max concurrent map instances setting in the IFD. So this value basically is added to the max threads, so that the number of threads that is running on the launcher becomes something could be max threads plus each max concurrent map instances value. So basically, if you have a watch with max concurrent instance set to 2 in your IFD or the MSD for that particular watch, and if you have max threads set to, for example, 25 in your INI, then on that launcher, the number of threads that can run would become 25 plus 2, which would be 27. Please move to slide 18. The disable max thread setting is available in the INI, which basically helps to disable the max threads option when enabled. To enable this, you need to set it to 1. Basically, what we have seen is this is not a very commonly used setting. So you don't need to worry about, like, for example, you can just make the max threads to set it to 0 if you don't want to use it. But if you want to use it, you need to say enable it to 1 because the default is 0. Please move to slide 19. At this point of time, let me hand it over to Phil Van Balen, who will be taking you through the rest of the presentation.
Thank you, Arun, and hello, everyone. In section 4, we're going to cover some launcher map states. And when the launcher starts, maps can be in different states. The states are init pending, which would mean it's waiting for all triggers, resource pending, and that means it's waiting for resources, or execution, of course, which is when the map is running. Please move to slide 20. Okay, now when the launcher initiates an individual map thread for each successful combination of specified triggers, a map might require multiple events to occur and multiple resources to be available, and the launcher coordinates these events and resources based on the settings configured in the IFD, or the Integration Flow Designer. A map is ready to run when all its triggers have occurred and all required resources known to the launcher are available. Then that's when execution would occur. If either of those two scenarios haven't occurred, then we're in init pending or we're in resource pending. Please move to slide 21. Okay, now init pending, the definition would be if the map associated with a watch has multiple triggers and at least one trigger occurs, the map is placed in an init pending state until all triggers occur. Maps in an init pending state are reevaluated each time another trigger occurs. and this is the state when a map is waiting for all triggers to be satisfied. Please move to slide 22. Now, the resource pending state refers to the state where resources shared by other map instances known to the launcher are not available. After the map is initiated, if a shared resource, such as a file, for example, is in use, then the launcher places the map in a resource pending state until those resources are available. And you can see if you're using Management Console, that's when you would see the amount of initial init pending or resource pending maps, because that is displayed there. You can also use the command line to display these states as well. Please move to slide 23. Now, there are a couple settings that you can use to control the amount of init pendings and control the flow of resources on the server. We have init pending high and init pending low, and these settings are the ones that help manage resources on the server. The higher you increase these settings, the more server resources are consumed. Init pending high pauses the listener threads if too many init pendings occur. Init pending low resumes the listener threads that have been paused by init pending high. There's also init pending idle MS, and this setting controls how often the launcher checks to see if init pending maps can be executed. This can improve performance and reduce CPU usage. Please move to slide 24. Typically, you can set the init pending high up to 2,000, and that's then set init pending low to 1/2 or 1/3 of the high setting. Depending on who you ask, the figures may differ. They could be higher or lower. To enable it, you simply give it a value greater than zero. As an example, if you had 1,000 files that were dropped at once in a trigger directory, and the init pending high is set to 500. In this scenario, whatever the watch max threads or max concurrent map settings are for the maps will start running. The next 500 will be put into init pending, and the rest will update when the init pending low value is reached. So if you had an init pending low of 200, 300 init pending maps would need to run. Then another 300 would go into init pending, which would pause the listener thread and save resources. And that's basically how it works and how it saves resources, by pausing the listener thread and allowing a certain number of maps to go ahead and execute. Now, you can test your init pending high setting to a value or using a value close to where you think the launcher performance starts to degrade. And this obviously is something you have to test and review. And then set your init pending low to a value where you can see consistent throughput. For example, if you saw the launcher start to throw down when your init pendings grow to 5,000 and beyond, but it appears to perform well below 5,000, then start with init pending high equals 5,000 and init pending low at 2,000 or 2,500. And those would give you ballpark settings, but of course you'd need to monitor it and then make adjustments as you see how the system performs. Please move to slide 25. Init pending low. Okay, and as we had mentioned, this setting resumes the listener threads that have been paused by init pending high. And to enable it, you just set a value greater than zero. And again, this is usually set to 1/2 to 1/3 of the init pending high setting. Again, you need to fine tune by testing with different data sizes and volumes. All systems are different, a lot of different variables, so testing is important. Please move to slide 26. The init pending idle MS entry controls how often the launcher checks to see if init pending maps can be executed, but it's not related to triggering directly. The default value is 1. Typically recommended settings are from 20 to 170 or 200 as a start, and this setting can reduce CPU usage. Basically, this setting controls the thread's pull-scan interval. There's one thread per watch, and they are all pulling the internal lists of pending events to check whether there are maps waiting to be started. Higher values in general may help reduce CPU usage time when idle, but higher values can introduce latency to map execution. So you have to be careful. I mean, I have seen people using settings of 1,000 and that type of stuff, but typically I think they're below 500 is normal. You know, so as mentioned, start in the 100 to 200 range and see how the system performs. The parameter, of course, specifies the time in milliseconds that an pending thread should remain idle between mapping attempts, and valid values are 1 to 10,000, or 1 millisecond to 10 seconds. Please move to slide 27. Now we'll look at some miscellaneous settings. We have the stream max mem setting, run map cache, and the poll wait time min. Please move to slide 28. And the stream max mem settings are typically used with adapters like the FTP adapter, where you may be transferring large amounts of data back and forth. And when data passed to and from an adapter exceeds the size of the stream max mem limit, data will be paged to a temporary file to limit memory consumption of the process. This isn't always used, and by default, the value is 500, but I believe it is disabled. To enable uncommented, okay, set whatever value you want, and then you also have to set the stream max mem directory. Okay, what that does is whenever the data that's passed to the adapter exceeds the size of the stream max mem limit, the temporary file will be created in the directory specified with stream max mem directory. And of course, ensure that the path points to a directory with sufficient file space, and it must have correct permissions and be local to the server. And of course, you do need to enable it by uncommenting the setting. Please move to slide 29. The run map cache setting. This setting defines the max number of run maps to be cached in memory, which can help performance. The default value is 300. Minimum value is 10. Again, to enable it, just uncomment it. If your memory is very low, you may want to disable this setting. Otherwise, make sure the value is higher than the actual number of run maps. Make sure that run maps are not deployed with an MSL. Each watch will be loaded into RAM and resources wasted. And that, obviously, you can deploy run maps with the Integration Flow Designer, but you also can deploy them with an MSL, and that's something that you don't want to do. So whenever you set your or configure your deploy, make sure that you're not sending an MSL with your run map. Send them separately. If you want to enable and update run maps without restarting the launcher, this setting cannot be used and would need to be disabled. Okay, so you can't update run maps on the fly with this setting. Please move to slide 30. This is the poll wait time min setting. And this setting sets the polling interval, or how often messages are checked to be available for triggering, commonly used with WebSphere MQ and other type of messaging adapters. Default value is 2,000, which is 2 seconds. To enable it, you simply uncomment it and set your value. The default value is 2,000, and a while ago, we received a number of calls regarding maps not running fast enough when triggering off of WebSphere MQ, and the problem turned out to be the poll wait time min setting of 2,000, which meant that the queue was only being pulled every 2 seconds, so maps were only being triggered every 2 seconds. And once we got the value down lower, I think of, you know, probably less than 100, then the throughput greatly increased. So that's something. If you're using MQ or other messaging adapters, you might want to keep your eye on. Please move to slide 31. This is the adapter idle settings, and you'll find them towards the bottom of the DTX.ini setting. And the idle settings are entered, as you can see in the presentation there, idle XXX, where XXX would be the adapter name or acronym. And we have idle DB as an example, but it could be idle FTP or idle Java or idle JMS or something like that. And the idle setting is the number of seconds to allow a connection to be idle before automatically disconnecting. And zero disables this feature. And this is a very important feature for connections in general. If connections are allowed to go idle, they can go stale. And then when they're tried to be reused, because TX will try and reuse connections whenever possible, if they're stale, then that will cause connection failures. And you can prevent that with the idle DB setting. And basically what that will do is whatever the value is that you set for idle DB, after that number of seconds, the setting will be disconnected. And when WTX needs to reestablish a connection, it will do it from scratch. And that greatly increases the chances that you'll have a successful connection. There's no recommended setting. It typically has to be done by fine-tuning because it varies with adapters. Like, for instance, the FTP adapter, I think 15 is fairly common, 15 seconds, where database connections could be anywhere from 30 to 60 to 120. So it's something that you typically experiment with, but it's also something that is almost always used with adapters. There's also some other adapters like Keep with the idle settings. It's the HLIM, which is hard limit, SLIM, soft limit, and Keep, but we didn't cover them in any detail because they're not used quite as often as the idle settings. Perhaps another presentation we'll go into them in some detail. Please move to slide 32. The last section of the DTX.ini is the JVM and JNI settings. The JNI layer trace is the first setting, and use the JNI trace for Java adapters or other Java activity with WTX. To enable the JNI trace, you uncomment the setting, change a switch to on, and then provide a full path and file name for the trace file. And the JNI layer trace collects details about a Java adapter problem that are not recorded in the Java-based adapter trace file. If you use the minus verbose option, which would be specified in the JVM options section of the DTX.ini file, the JNI layer trace file includes the details about the JVM garbage collection, class loading, and the JNI invocation call. Please move to slide 33. And here we have an example of the JNI layer trace, how you would see that section within the DTX.ini. You can see that you have the switch that is set to on, and then for the file parameter, you give the full path and file name. And then we have two new and previously undocumented options, which are PID and level. PID provides the process ID to the file name, and level controls the amount of detail in the trace. Level is set with numeric values, and it's cumulative, meaning that all of the lower settings are included as you move up through to the higher settings. So a setting of 100, you can see all the settings at the bottom of the slide. Setting of 100 would contain all of the detail in 10 through 50. And as I said, this set is currently undocumented. I think it will be in the documentation for the next release, but right now the only documentation we have on this is in the presentation that you're seeing right now. Please move to slide 34. One of the JVM options is external jar files, and the external jar files section lists or enables you to list jar files to be included in the class path variable, which will be passed to the Java virtual machine. The entries are named jar1, jar2, etc., up to a possible 128 entries. So you could list 128 jar files in this section. To add extra entries, you do manually edit it. You would put jar3, then you would have to save the DTX dot. INI file after you specify the path and the jar file. You also have to uncomment, and then you have to restart the launcher. Please move to slide 35. And then the final JVM option would be, or JVM setting would be the JVM options. And this enables you to specify additional options to be passed to the Java virtual machine. Each entry in this section specifies a single JVM option. The entries are named option 1, option 2, option 3, etc., up to a possible 128 entries, the same as with the jar files. And to enable the options, you uncomment and add the parameter as seen in the example at the bottom of the slide. Also note that option 3 on the slide uses the minus verbose options that provide more detail in the JNI trace. But any valid JVM options can be used in this section. In the example, you have the min and max heap settings for option 1 and option 2. Please move to slide 36. We always encourage everyone to contact the WTX support site, where you can find tech notes, release announcements, APARs, etc., and that's the first link that you see on this slide. The second link is to the must-gather documents, which detail specific logs that are typically needed by support, along with instructions on how to send them to support. Please move to slide 37. And when you're contacting technical support before submitting test cases, please try and simplify the test case as much as possible by removing any third-party dependencies not required. For example, if any inputs are read from databases or MQ and they aren't relevant to the problem directly, if you can turn on the backup files so the database connections or MQ or whatever it is can be eliminated and can be done with a file input, that simplifies things and will expedite resolution of the problem. Anything you can do to simplify the issue and cut down configuration time is going to turn around the issue faster. Please move to slide 38. In summary, the DTX INI file is a configuration file which can be used for setting mapping threads. It can help in fine-tuning the launcher for better throughput and performance. Can be used for setting idle parameters to disconnect adapter connections. Can be used for tuning JVM options, enabling debugging options for the launcher, connections, and resource manager to help in debugging issues encountered. And, of course, remember that the launcher needs to be recycled or restarted for the changes to take effect. Please move to slide 39. At this time, I'm going to hand things back over to Joseph.
Thank you, Arun and Phil, for a great presentation. At this point in time, Jackie, we would like to open the line for questions.
We have no questions at this time.
Thank you, Jackie. I do see a question here coming from Jen, and his question is, which settings are relevant to WTX Broker plugin?
Most of the settings in the INI would be for the launcher. There are a few settings, like the adapter settings, maybe, that can be used from the broker as well, but not very too many settings are available from the broker because most of the resource management and other things are usually from the launcher.
Yeah, the JVM would be relevant with the message broker, the JVM settings.
I just noticed another one in the group chat here. The question is, what is the difference between file listen count and max threads? Can you please explain with some examples?
File listen count is basically used with the file adapter or the file listener trigger. That is, if you have a watch or an MSL on your launcher, which is listening to files, basically it triggers on that file. So if you give a file listen count, what it does is in a particular directory, it listens if you have a number like 25 or 20 or something, it listens to 20 files. The file listener will go up to 25 files, it listens to that, et cetera, do it in that way. That is not linked to the max threads. Max threads is basically the number of threads or the number of maps that can run concurrently on your launcher for all the watches. So basically, if you have a watch for, say, MQ, if you have a watch for database, et cetera, with maps doing or listening to database triggers or MQ triggers, et cetera, and the maps have been designed in such a way they can run in multi-threading, that is, they're not dependent on any resources that can make them to run single thread, then in those instances, what happens is, if you have, say, at a time you get something like 3 MQ messages, then if that map, which is listening to the MQ, can run 3 instances or 3 threads for the same map at the same time, processing all the 3 MQ messages. So that is something related to the max threads or threading. That is not related to the file listen count. File listen count is basically only for the file adapter, which helps in listening to the number of files in a particular watch directory.
Max threads would be considered a global setting where it affects everything, where the file listen count would only be for the file adapter.
Hope that answers the question, if that's what they're looking for.
Thanks again, Sue and Arun.
Yeah, if any of you have questions at a later time, you should have our email IDs in the front of the presentation that you should get in the PDF. You are always welcome to send us an email, and we'll be more than happy to get back to you. If we do not have information or if you do not have questions right now, you can always send us an email as well.
All right, so I just received another question from Jen, and the question is, when will the additional adapter settings, for example, HLIM, VLIM, et cetera, be described?
I don't have a definite date on that, possibly sometime in the future. They aren't used that often, so it depends on whether something else takes precedence, basically, over that. I mean, there are descriptions in the DTX.ini file. If you need something in more detail at this time, you can certainly email us directly. But, again, typically they're not used that often. So, I mean, if you just went with the idle connection, you should be fine, or the idle setting.
Yeah. Basically, the hard limit is like setting a hard limit for your number of connections that can be used for the adapter. For example, if you have a HLIM set for your database adapter, say, to 25, then at any given time, the number of connections for the database adapter cannot exceed more than 25. And if you have a request for a connection, then probably either the map will be put in a pending state for the lack of connection. So that's what HLIM and SLIM would come into picture for. And keep setting is usually not used. It's recommended not to be used. It's not very often used. Like keep DB or something is not often used, and it's recommended not to be used unless specifically requested by us from support or development tells us to use it. So basically, the only commonly used setting for with regards to that would be the idle parameter. Hope that answers the question.
Thank you again, Phil and Arun. It looks like that's all the questions we have for today. So at this point in time, we will conclude the presentation.